I call the Agriculture, Finance, and Policy Committee to order on Thursday, March 2nd, 2023. There is a quorum present, I believe. Yes. We will start off with our first bill, which is Representative Nelson on House File 1302, funding to provide and establish a meat and poultry processing certification navigator. If you can please move your bill, Representative Nelson.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I would like to move the 1302, and I believe that will be laid over for possible inclusion in the further omnibus bill.
All right. Thank you. Representative Nelson moves the House File 1302 be laid over for possible inclusion. I see that we have a DE1 amendment. Do you want to move your amendment, Representative Nelson?
Yes, I would like to, thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to move the DE1. And this amendment reflects that there's a USDA match. So this portion of the bill, it's about half of the funding for the position is coming from the USDA. So the dollar amounts are roughly half of what was in the original language. And so I'd move that amendment.
All right, discussion to the DE1. Hearing none, all those in favor of the DE1 amendment say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The ayes have it, the motion prevails, the amendment DE1 is adopted. Now the bill's in the shape that you want, Representative Nelson, to your bill.
Yes, thank you. What the idea of this bill is, the challenges of meat processing and inspection and everything that happens with there, making sure the permits and the compliance and everything is taking place as need to be, can be an overwhelming and daunting task. And for somebody that's coming in, or maybe they're starting a new business model or transitioning, really having somebody to help them through the process, making sure that the proper permits and inspections and safety plans are all in place are crucially important, because one missed plan or one missed step really creates it starting over from the beginning sometimes. And we want to make sure that this process is walked through correctly and carefully, and can help not be a burden to new businesses starting out or transitioning. So with that, I do believe I have a few testifiers. Okay. They would like to testify on this.
All right. Our first one is Greg Wersky from King Chickens and Company. If you can please. And then the next one we have is Lise Walker from Walker Farms. Oh, she's not here. Okay. And then Paul Sabonsky. All right. And then we have Sarah Goldman. All right. If you can please make your way to the testifying table. Greg, if you can please identify yourself before the committee and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is Greg Wersky. I'm with Clean Chickens and Company. We're a mobile USDA poultry processor out of Elk River. We serve most of the state. My story is we started 4 years ago with the USDA planning to be able to process. One of my problems when I was building my plant was to get a HACCP plan or get some assistance with a HACCP plan and SSOP. We called through the whole state of Minnesota, and we eventually got our help from the state of Wisconsin with their University of Wisconsin. This is needed in the state of Minnesota. I've been to a lot of different plants. There's some language barriers, and with those barriers come barriers to HACCP plans. Starting new, it's very scary. If we had a coach or a consultant that would help out with those plans, would make that transition from a custom meat shop to an inspected meat shop relatively easier, and we would have more value added with the meat that we sell in the state, which would help our economy as a whole for the farmers and retailers.
All right, thank you. And then we have Paul over on Zoom. If you could please
good afternoon
for the committee.
Yeah. Thank you, Chairman Vang.
Good afternoon. I appreciate the opportunity to testify today on behalf of House File 1302 by Representative Allison to establish a meat poultry processing certification navigator position at MDA. I am a lifelong livestock farmer. I'm from Wabasso, Minnesota, southwestern Minnesota. I have both cattle and hogs on my farm. I currently also raise hogs for Nyman Ranch, which is a specialty market. Plus, I also do direct marketing of both hogs and cattle through local lockers, where the return is much higher for those individual sales that I do. COVID put a lot of pressure on small lockers due to the shutdown of large processing plants. Because local lockers are so vital to our remaining independent livestock farmers, I and several partners helped start a bottleneck project to support these businesses. This is the project I'm talking about. It's one of the handouts that's available to committee members. This project is our fiscal sponsor for this project was Minnesota Farmers Union. It was also an initiative of the regional partnership of the University of Minnesota, RSDP, and also a number of other organizations also support from MDA. In your packet, as I mentioned, you'll see there's an executive summary on page 4 that gives the full depth of our report. That report was a result of doing over 50 interviews with independent processors, basically to hear from them what were some of the things that would be helpful in terms of their businesses, and particularly our report was looking at how do we transition, how do we have more local lockers rather than closing. And one of the key recommendations that you find on the page 4 of that report is support for this navigator position at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture to assist processors in this process, particularly when people are trying to take over a locker or enter into the business. That's where they need some help. And that position, we believe, would be a vital function. It's one of our among our many recommendations, but one of our key recommendations. In closing, I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify today. Also want to say we also support House File 1303, which is coming next on your docket. And thank you so much for making this opportunity to do this for my farm today.
Thank you, Paul. Our next testifier is Sarah Goldman, if you can identify yourself before the committee.
Chair Ving and members of the committee, my name is Sarah Goldman, and I'm a policy organizer with the Land Stewardship Project. The Land Stewardship Project works on behalf of over 1,000 farmer members across the state, many of whom reside in greater Minnesota. Over the past 2 years, as our staff has spoken with new and beginning meat processors and small to mid-sized livestock farmers, it's really become abundantly clear that there are significant challenges for small meat processors who are trying to get off the ground, update or expand their facilities, and many of our livestock producers who rely on those processors as well. So two bills before you today, HF 1302, which creates a meat processing liaison position within the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, and HF 1303, which establishes meat processor training grants, provide important resources to alleviate these challenges. The new meat processing liaison position will provide needed support to processors, especially those processors just getting up and running. MDA is the subject matter expert on inspection regulation and deals with inspection questions on a day-to-day basis, so they're very well equipped to answer questions and help folks navigate this process. In addition, this position will leverage federal resources through a one-to-one federal funding match. I wanted to mention that this proposal has widespread support. You'll see a number of letters of support in your packets. This proposal was included in the governor's budget, and many organizations, including the Minnesota Farmers Union, the Minnesota Farm Bureau, Minnesota Association of Meat Processors, Regenerative Agriculture Alliance, and Latino Economic Development Center have all submitted letters of support for this proposal. I did want to also talk about HF 1303 ahead of the introduction of this next bill. So this provides training grants to processors, and it's also an important bill because it provides resources so that processors have the skills that they need to update, to expand, to transfer or transition their processing facilities. Meat and poultry processors under federal or state inspection need to have sanitation standard operating procedures, or SSOPs, and hazard analysis and critical control point, or HACCP, plans. They need to have these in place, and developing procedures and plans can be difficult, and often producers have many questions. These grants would provide needed financial support so that processors have the resources to develop these plans in addition to support for business plan development. This proposal also has widespread support from a number of organizations, including the Minnesota Farmers Union, the Minnesota Farm Bureau, Minnesota Association of Meat Processors, Regenerative Agriculture Alliance, and the Latino Economic Development Center. Thank you, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
All right, thank you. So those are all the testifiers I have in my notes. Are there any public testifiers that would like to testify? Or anyone that I'm missing? Okay. Seeing none, discussion to the bill. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Nelson. Just wondering on liaison and working with folks, the ability to have multiple languages, is that something that you foresee? I'm just thinking of, you know, you're familiar with Longchen and South St. Paul and some of the opportunities with meat processing for various communities. Maybe just if you could give your perspective on that.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Hansen. While we don't have the language specifically in there that, you know, they have to be available for, you know, multiple languages, I think that is important. There are one of the things that is quite prevalent in our small processing plants or small lockers is a variety of ethnic groups or ethnicities that are really running these. And, you know, oftentimes English is not their first language. And I think, I don't know if somebody from the department would like to kind of answer that, what, you know,
I see
how
Commissioner
they yes. Kind of work through that process.
You can identify yourself before the committee.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Hansen, for the question. Yes, this is a big part of what we're looking to do agency-wide, really, around accessibility for our programs and licensing. So certainly this would be a big part of what we're trying to do generally with meat processing and licensing, but also for this position as well. And I did just want to take the time. I apologize we did not sign up, but we were very, very supportive of House File 1302. As mentioned, it was in the governor's budget, and we really appreciate the consideration for this position.
Representative Hansen. Further questions? Seeing none. Closing remarks, Representative Nelson, and please renew your motion.
I will. With that, I will renew my motion that this bill be relayed over. I think in an ideal world, we wouldn't have to create this position, but at the same time, there's so much complexity with making sure that proper permits and training and the safety plans are in place. I think it also becomes a necessity. And I thank you for the consideration on this, and I would move that it be laid over.
All right. House File, Representative Nelson renews their motion that House File 1302 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion. House File 1302 as amended is laid over. The next bill we have is Representative Walkermott, House File 23, Safe Workplaces for Meat and Poultry Processing. Thank you for being here, Representative Walkermott. Since you're not a member of the committee, I move that House File 23 be re-referred to the Judiciary Committee. And I see that there is an A1 author's amendment, and I move the amendment. Representative Walkermott, please move to your amendment.
Well, first of all, thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee, for the opportunity to come before you this afternoon to present House File 23, the Safe Workplaces for Meat and Poultry Processing Workers Act. Madam Chair, I'm bringing this amendment before you and the committee for your consideration. It pertains to the definition of meatpacking operation and the businesses and industries that would fall under this definition. Currently, the bill includes egg production, and that's EGG, is an Easter egg or a scrambled egg, not ag. It removes the egg production. This is done in consultation with members of the egg production industry, as well as the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. And I would ask for your support for this amendment, Madam Chair, as a result of that compromise that we're working on with them. Thank you.
All right, discussion to the A1 amendment. Hearing none, all those in favor to the A1 say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say nay. The ayes have it, the motion prevails. The amendment A1 is adopted. Now the bill is in the shape that you want. Representative Walkema, please tell us about your bill.
Well, thank you again for that, Madam Chair, and for your support on the amendment and for the opportunity to present House File 23. Madam Chair and members, I'm bringing this bill forward because during the COVID-19 pandemic, I heard some horrifying and heartbreaking stories from my constituents in central Minnesota about the inhumane working conditions at meat and poultry processing plants. That's why I've authored this legislation. I first put it forward in 2021, and again in 2022, and I'm continuing to push for this legislation today. There, you will hear a few stories of why this is important. We had a very successful hearing in the Labor Committee a couple of weeks ago where we had a whole bunch of workers come. Unfortunately, Madam Chair, they weren't able to take work off again to come to this committee, but they do send their regards and just know that there are many workers who will benefit from this who wish they could be here today, but they can't afford to take off work. I'd like to walk you through the bill a little bit, Madam Chair and members. We'll start with Section 2 of the bill is the definitions of, and particularly what constitutes as a meat processing worker, as a meat packing operation. I would draw your attention to Subdivision 6. A couple of the changes that we've made, again, we, in consultation with the departments and with the interested stakeholders, we have adjusted the bill to respond to some concerns. Obviously, you know all about the removal of egg production because we just amended that out of the bill. Another piece that I'd like to bring to your attention, Madam Chair, is on line 2.5, in which we are excluding businesses with 50 more employees. That was in consultation with the small mom-and-pop meat processing operations. And so, again, this is a sign of, you know, we want to protect these workers. We want to make sure they have safe workplaces, but we're more than willing to work with stakeholders and constituencies to improve the bill and make sure that this is workable for all parties involved. Section 3 of the bill creates a workers' rights coordinator. This would be a position housed within the Department of Labor and Industry. Their duties would, as you can see on page 2.22, would be include inspecting, reviewing, recommending improvements to the practices and procedures of meatpacking operations in Minnesota. Section 4 creates a refusal to work, the right to refuse to work under dangerous conditions. Section 5 is about enforcement and compliance. It would establish a good cause for leaving employment in unsuitable health work environments during a public health emergency, and it would prohibit, it would give the coordinator that I just described under Section 3 give them the ability to enforce all the provisions of the Act with the ability to prosecute and or investigate by the Attorney General, District Attorney. Excuse me, Madam Chair.
Bless you.
Or any city or county attorney. Section 6 talks about prohibiting retaliation against employees and whistleblowers. Section 7 includes injuries, safe worker programs, training and reporting criteria. It establishes a safe worker program committee that would provide written procedures to identify ergonomic hazards and contributing risk factors. The committee would include safety and health professionals, physicians, workers, and the workers' collective bargaining representatives. Really, we're trying to be preventative here, right? Rather than have bad things happen and we have to enforce these things, we want to be able to work together as a team and stop some of these hazards from happening in the first place on the front end. The committees would reassess standards annually and gauge the effectiveness of the current standard to ensure safety goals are met and maintained. It would require employers to provide health and safety training to new employees and no less than 8 hours of safety training annually. And then at least 2 hours must be on topics related to facilities, ergonomics, and injury prevention. And it would make that employers have to make a record of all worker incidents that require medical and first aid personnel and make that available to the commissioner OSHA and authorized employee representatives. I want to especially bring your attention to subdivision 7 of this section. This relates to pandemic protections. So, Madam Chair, this subdivision only applies during a peacetime public health emergency that would be declared by the governor involving airborne transmission of a disease. And this does requires employers to provide personal protective equipment, PPE, at no cost to employees, and on meat and poultry processing workers adequate time to sanitize and wash their hands. It would make it so that there would be routine cleaning and disinfecting at frequently touched surfaces, workstations, and training rooms. And it would require employers to provide paid leave to all meat and poultry processing workers to recuperate from an illness, injury, or care for an ill family member. Now, I've heard some concerns about this and how would this match up with the current bill that is moving through regarding earned sick and safe time. Our intention is to not have a different standard for those affected by this law. We would want to match whatever's in this law with whatever winds up getting signed into law by the governor on the earned sick and safe time legislation that's been moving forward. We're getting towards the end of the bill here, Madam Chair. Section 8 just requires notification, requires employers to post all the rights established by the provisions of the Act, as well as training manuals and language in the language that is fluent for the workers who are working there. And last but not least, Madam Chair, there is an appropriation to this bill. It would appropriate $360,000 in fiscal year 2024 and $169,000 in fiscal year 2025 create that new position within the Department of Labor and Industry and then give them the tools to go and do the job. One thing I want to note to you, Madam Chair and members, is that we did get a fiscal note in on this recently that was different from the one put forward for the fiscal note when this was heard in the Labor and Industry Committee. Basically, the reason for that, Madam Chair, is that the Attorney General's office believes that they would incur some costs. Since we just got that, I have not had the chance to talk with them and hear more about why they think that they would be incurring those costs. But to be fair, Madam Chair, that particular cost would not be within the jurisdiction of your committee. It would be ironed out in another committee. But I just wanted to bring that to your and to members' attention in case you had a question about the discrepancy between the fiscal note and the appropriation that we have in this bill. With that, Madam Chair, again, this bill is about protecting Minnesota's meat and poultry processing workers. They are the people who have put themselves and their families at significant risk to ensure that our families have food on our tables throughout the pandemic and even today. I really do believe this is a bill about workers, but also that all Minnesotans who eat food will benefit by passing this bill forward. So that's the bill. That's why I bring it forward. That's what it does. So with that, Madam Chair, I know that there are some testifiers who are here to provide you with more information as you and the members of your committee consider your motion to re-refer. Thank you.
All right. Our first testifier is Michael Lacoste from UFCW Local. If you can identify yourself before the committee and proceed.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Michael Lacoste. I'm the organizing director of United Food and Commercial Workers Union Local 663. Our union represents more than 17,000 essential meat packing and processing, food preparation, retail, and other workers in Minnesota. I'm here to testify to the importance and need to improve policies and accountability measures that protect meat packing and poultry worker safety and are critical to our state's and nation's safe food supply. Meat packing is one of the most dangerous industries for workers on the job. Health and safety is continuously brought up as one of the important issues facing meat and poultry workers in Minnesota. In 2020, COVID-19 outbreaks wreaked havoc in the pork and poultry plants where our union members and non-union workers work. As a union with employers, we pieced together improved safety plans to protect meat packing and poultry workers from the virus with the resources at hand, but not all plants were as fortunate. Further, workers in this industry face conditions that are often dangerous and physically demanding. The work that meatpacking and poultry workers do is critical to providing families with safe food on their tables. This is not food versus worker safety. What we're asking is for a fair playing field so that the safety of workers goes hand in hand with safe food and a safe supply chain. Worker safety is food safety. The Minnesota Safe Workplaces for Meat and Poultry Processing Workers Act provides comprehensive workplace health and safety protections for workers to improve the safety of our food supply. Our state can and must do better for these workers. We ask that you please pass House File 23. Thank you for your time.
All right, thank you. Next we have is Greg Andres from Greg's Meat Processing. If you can proceed, identify yourself before the committee and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Greg Andres. I own and operate Greg's Meat Processing in Hampton, Minnesota with my family. Requirements of this bill that we think we should bring to your attention. The work committee requirements that are in the bill states you need a certified ergonomist, a physician that specializes in occupational medicine, quarterly meetings. What we're asking is, in small towns, rural Minnesota, many don't even have doctors in hospitals. Where are they going to come up with doctors and certified ergonomists to come to their plants four times a year for meetings? You can't even get a doctor's appointment in a lot of these places. They're so overbooked. Where would we ever get them? The cost associated with it, the large plants that should be addressed in this bill can afford stuff like that. Small plants, we can't afford nothing like that. Who would pay for it? Is the state going to give us money to hire them, or is the state going to hire doctors and ergonomists to come to our plant? If you're asking us, we have to do it. You know, there's absolutely no way physically or financially that we could ever afford to do this. And will these doctors from Mayo or Alina Health East come out and put their name on something? These companies will never allow them to sign off on your work plans because then there's liability. Everybody knows what insurance does and lawyers do. Nobody puts their name on nothing anymore. I mean, who would you ever get to sign off stating you have a safe workplace? And the next person gets injured on that piece of equipment, a lawyer is going to sue the company that agreed, or the whoever agreed to it is going to be liable, just waiting for a lawsuit. Another part underneath pandemic protections, the part with dividers and that, that's fine, no problem. Nobody in the industry would care about that. But there's a part in there that says you have to have air exchangers that ensure on-directional air flare, outdoor air, and infiltration, both production, cafeteria, and locker rooms. These are large production things. Nothing that comes up like when a pandemic hits. Nobody plans these years out. We have a quote from Rista Refrigeration, Red Wing, Minnesota, one of the biggest refrigeration companies in the southern part of the state. Just to do my locker rooms and my break room area is $200,000 to $250,000, let alone the architects, the engineering, and the construction costs for another $100,000. That would be putting in, this has to be done ahead of time. It can't be started after a pandemic hits because it's never going to be there. I'm looking at $350,000. How can small businesses all of a sudden take on a load for $350,000? And I'm not a big plant. But where, who is the state going to cover these costs that they're telling us we have to incur? Because you can't do a pandemic and start projects like this. These take years to put into planning to go with it. The 30 hours with 1 hour paid sick leave, we're not sure. The website for Minnesota Department of Labor and Industry states that there is no law requiring this. I know there's another bill going through. If that bill doesn't pass, this one does. Is our industry now discriminated against? Because we're the only one that probably has a bill saying we have to do this. If the other bill doesn't pass for the state of Minnesota, are we now liable as the only industry that would have to do it? How would we be able to retain our employees with all this extra cost on small businesses? And if we already offer PTO time, which we do, is this beyond PTO time, or is the PTO time help cover it? You know, we'd have to balance where we are in there.
Greg, if you can please finish your thought.
Okay. In conclusion, I would ask for an exemption of 499 employees. That's what USDA considers for large plants. Small and medium-sized plants are family-owned. We work side by side with our employees. Many are family and friends. We would never endanger them. If this bill is passed as written and the state does not allocate money for the requirements stated in this bill, many small to medium-sized businesses will be forced to close, leaving only large corporations left. Many of these corporations are from other countries like China and Brazil. They own a large percentage of the large meat processing plants. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Greg. Testifiers, because I want to make sure we have enough discussion to the bill, if you can please limit your testimony to under 2 minutes, and that way we can make sure that we have enough discussion. The next testifier is Jordan McCollum. And we also have Travis McDonald. If you can please identify yourself before the committee. Thank you.
Yep. I'm Jordan McCollum. I'm the executive director for the Minnesota Association of Meat Processors. Thank you, Madam Chair, for your, letting me come up here and testify today. As the executive director of the Minnesota Association of Meat Processors, I represent a large nonprofit network of small meat processors throughout our state. Our member plants have and continue to provide valuable and irreplaceable meat processing services to Minnesota farmers and communities. The COVID pandemic served to highlight what we've all known. Small meat processors are a critical part of our food supply chain. We are at a time when diversifying the meat industry is vital, as is shown by the various state and federal support programs directed to strengthening small meat processors in an attempt to balance the protein production industry. Our membership has provided ample evidence to indicate that there are currently provisions within this bill that will endanger the future existence of many of our small meat processors, or at a minimum, prevent their future growth and accessibilities to the communities that they serve. In particular, the bill as written includes a 50 employee threshold that very, very clearly creates a barrier of entry to growing small companies due to high cost program. I am here today to echo the sentiments of those I represent and ask that the employee threshold follow the guidelines already used by state and federal agencies. During the COVID pandemic, federal support for PPP loans defined small meat processors as up to 1,000 employees. At a minimum, we ask that the threshold set by USDA, FSIS, who defines small meat processors as 500 employees or less, be used.
If you can please finish your thought, yep. Please.
As previously mentioned, concerns regarding repetitive motion injuries in the previous committee hearing are very reasonable and necessary. Please understand that working environment differences should be considered when determining the likelihood and severity of these injuries. While larger plants rely on repetitive assembly line activities, the small processors that we represent have a small staff, each person with a variety of responsibilities throughout their workday. The variety of responsibilities helps ensure that employees are less likely to suffer from repetitive injuries. These statements are a collection of sentiments provided by the Minnesota Association of Meat Processors, and we greatly appreciate your time and consideration. Thank you.
Thank you, Jordan.
And Madam Chair, I had a letter submitted to me this morning from another plant. Is it okay if I pass out copies of that?
If you can pass that to our page, Zach, and he will make sure members get it.
Thank you.
Corey Bennett from AgriGulf. If you can please identify yourself before the committee.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. Corey Bennett, representing the Minnesota AgriGrowth Council. Just going to be very, very brief, Madam Chair, and try to work through this as much as I possibly can. I just want to start out by saying there's a lot of this bill that AgriGrowth actually supports. There's some very good things in this bill with regards to protecting workers, and that's our number one priority. With that said, we would like to talk to just a brief, I'm going to hit on three different points. First of all, I just want to say thank you to Representative Wolgemont for meeting with us on several different occasions to kind of work through the differences on these bills, and I really appreciate the time and the courtesy to do that. Just working through, I'm going to highlight three areas, Madam Chair, that are still something that we would like to work with the author on. The first one is on page 2, section 2, subdivision 6, line 2.4. This is the meatpacking worker definition. Thank you for the A1 amendment. Really appreciate the egg production. But in the spirit of more compromise, this is something I've talked with Representative Wolgamont as well, and that is to look at maybe excluding pet food manufacturing and rendering as well. These are very highly automated types of situations and types of industries. These are very large facilities. Various employees are spread out over a very large area. And when you look, Madam Chair, and compare that definition with Section 7, page 5 and 6, which is the meatpacking workers' injuries and workplace safety, 22 times in that section they talk about ergonomics. And I would just contest, Madam Chair, that in pet food manufacturing, egg production, which was already addressed in the A1, but also rendering, we just, from my knowledge, we don't see those types of injuries in that sort of automated type of situation. So I'd like to work with the author a little bit more, statistically look at the stats that might be involved in that, and have a further conversation. The second piece, Madam Chair, is the worker rights coordinator. That's on page 2, section 3. As you may be aware, I'm sure you all are, the meatpacking industry is very heavily regulated, not only on the federal level, but the state level as well, and the international level. We're not exactly sure what the new coordinator will bring that some of the other expertise don't have.
Mr. Bennett, if you could please make your final point.
But with that said, we certainly are thankful for knowing that this is going to be comprehensive and complaint-based, rather than just random visits onto our facilities. And just lastly, Madam Chair, I did have a good conversation with Representative Wolgamont on the Safe and Sick Bill and the provisions in this bill, talking about the conflict that these provisions have, and hoping that if the fact one moves over the other, that we have some sort of continuous benefit throughout and not just singling out one industry over another. So thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate your time.
Thank you. And the final testifier is Sarah Lopez from Unidos, Minnesota. If you can please identify yourself before the committee and proceed.
Hello, Madam Chair. My name is Sarah Lopez. Dear members of the Agriculture, Finance, and Policy Committee, Chair Bang. My name is Sarah Lopez, and I'm the Director of Policy at Unidos, Minnesota. Unidos, Minnesota is an immigrant and new American-led statewide organization, and we will power for Minnesota working families to advance social, racial, and economic justice with organizing operations in Southern, Central, and the metro area here in the state. We are here testifying in support of HF 23, the Meat and Poultry Processing Workers Act, because we all in this room agree that West Minnesotans work hard to provide for our families, and because we all in this room agree that all workers should get the care and need to stay well and to stay productive to continue moving our state forward, especially those workers who got us through a historic pandemic at great cost to themselves, their families, and their communities. Meatpacking workers have long faced dangerous working hazards, such as the double rate of amputations and repetitive motion injuries. The stories that our members from Southern and Central Minnesota shared during the labor committee hearing echo the stories of all meatpacking workers in Minnesota, union and non-union. With HF 23, we have an opportunity to make the meat and poultry processing sector safer for all workers. The Meat and Processing Workers Act builds on existing legislation, and it expands existing laws to protect all workers, union
Sarah,
and non-union.
Please finish your point.
Making all meat and processing plants safer and establishing consistent standards across all meat and processing plants. The hard work embedded in the promise of the sacredness of the American dream under fair conditions, we know that hard work and dedication to your job is not enough. That's why we support HF 23, because it gives every meat and poultry processing worker a chance at succeeding by boosting job quality for all workers. Thank you. I hope you vote in favor.
Thank you. We actually have one more testifier, Travis McDonald. If you can please identify yourself before the committee and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I am Travis McDonald, owner of McDonald's Meats in Clear Lake, Minnesota. Thank you for hearing me today. I'm here to voice my concerns about Bill HF 23 relating of safe workplace and meat processing. I can understand the intent behind the drafting of this bill, as a large meat processing facilities have been in the news over the pandemic. But this bill, as written, brings many small and medium-sized processors into scope. The exemption of 50 employees and under does not take into account that many processors also have retail storefronts. My business currently employs 42 employees, of which 17 are in the processing area. The other staff are a part of the retail administrative. We are expanding our retail, which would put us over that 50-employee mark. This bill is written very vague, with very vague language when it comes to identifying key points in the provision throughout the whole document. For example, the definition of meat packing operation in Subdivision 6 expects a grocery store preparing meat products, exempts a grocery store preparing meat products for immediate consumption. What is immediate consumption? If a grocery store or restaurant cuts steaks and freezes and sold later, does that still constitute immediate consumption? If so, then how does that differ from how I process? The vague language continues throughout in regards of defining terms, responsibilities, and enforcement. And I must ask the question, why is this bill focused entirely on meat products and processing? Are there not ergonomic challenges faced by other food product industries that should be included in this bill as such? I'm a fourth generation small processor. We've been serving our local community since 1914. Same family, same location for nearly 110 years. We strive every day to give our employees the best working environment possible in a facility of our size. If this bill would pass as written, it would probably cause us to close our business doors. And we do not have the staff nor the resources to meet the provisions set forth.
Travis, if you can finish your thought.
Yes, thank you very, very much.
Thank you. That is all we have for testifiers. I just want to thank you again to all the testimony and for making the commute to be here today to testify before the committee. We appreciate your presence here. We are now to the discussion to the bill. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Wolgamott, you know, in the past few weeks, there's been expose after expose of subcontracting out for children working in meat processing plants, cleaning up the mess. And I'm just wondering, how does your bill deal with an entity hiring children to do the cleaning as a subcontractor? What's the responsibility? Who does it apply to? Does it apply to the employer who hires the subcontractor, or would the subcontracting company also be covered under the act?
Representative Wolgamott.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for that question, Representative Hansen. As a dad myself, it's just been really heartbreaking, and what a horrifying nightmare to have those children in those circumstances. This bill is the intention is not to have a specifically to address that problem, but I would say that if you look at Section 3 and talking about the workers' rights coordinator, their duties are to inspect, review, and recommend improvements to the practices and procedures of meatpacking operations in Minnesota. My hope of putting this and intention of putting this legislation forward is by having a specific workers' rights coordinator in the Department of Labor and Industry and having those resources to go out and inspect and review and recommend improvements that things like that, you know, in addition to unsafe work practices, that, you know, having children in these factories doing that work would be investigated, and there would be more oversight from this worker rights coordinator.
Representative Hansen, and members, since we do have a very full agenda, I'm just going to allow one follow-up from each member. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Wolgamott. You know, I have some empathy for the small butcher shops and meat processors, but, you know, there's been such a great consolidation in the industry. I think Smithfield is owned by the Chinese government. It seems JBS, I think, is owned. It's hard to tell who owns what anymore with the various operations. And these are extremely large multinational corporations. I think they have the capacity to deal with these things in the bill. I worry that they find some way of wiggling out of them when they're that large, because they always seem to be able to get the lawyers or get the setup of a system where they have a way that they can avoid regulation. So how do you deal with that?
Representative Wagamott.
Well, we have enforcement. So if you look on Section 5, line 3-5, it goes through all the different ways that this law will be enforced and what happens if there's not compliance, who has the authority to investigate and prosecute. I believe a review of Section 5 on line 3.5 through 4.18 would really follow through on how this would be enforced and how bad actors would be prosecuted.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This might be a long question. Anyway, it was just raised about ownership of some of these big packing operations. Well, I don't think there's any mistaking who owns Greg's Meats in Hampton or McDonald's Meats in Clear Lake. They are here today telling us that this is not going to work for them. And, you know, Representative, I appreciate your amendment to exempt those under 50. I think that's a good step. But in talking with these folks that have these operations that employ 30, 40 people, and I think in Greg's case, his son was going to come back home and hopefully expand the operation, it appears that 50 probably isn't enough either. And I appreciate you going as far as you did, but I hope you would look at maybe expanding that sum. And have a letter here. It says the Small Business Administration and USDA Food Safety and Inspection Services defines a small meat processor as a business under 500 employees, and that's been mentioned here. So maybe some kind of a compromise on the size would be very well intended. And I guess the question, your language in terms of a pandemic protection, and I assume it would only be in the event there is a pandemic again, but you give no timelines in terms of how those requirements would have to be met. You just say on 10.4, employers must install and maintain the ventilation system. And I think it was Greg's Meats commented that to just ventilate his break room was over 200,000, and his production area, the people he has talked with, they don't make equipment that large to fully ventilate to the standards you have set here, no matter what the cost to ventilate a room of that size. So I think that's an issue, also a problem with the bill. And, you know, it just seems that we are, I should have a question here someplace.
Madam Chair,
I think you just asked, can you repeat your question again, Representative Anderson? If you do have one.
I'm getting to it.
And Chair Representative Anderson.
Representative Wagamott, I'm sorry, you do not have the floor. Representative Anderson.
Do I get one response after?
You get one follow-up, but okay. Keep it brief. Okay.
Go ahead.
Representative Wagamott.
Well, thank you for that, Madam Chair, and my apologies to you. First, to your first comment, Representative Anderson, thank you for bringing that up. And my intention would be that these are 50 or more employees I believe one of the testifiers mentioned, you know, having a retail worker or someone at the front desk or something like that. That would not be my intention to have them cover for that threshold. So if that's something that, you know, this bill has a few more stops in the House, it has a few more stops in the Senate, Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, if that's something that we would want to work on to clarify, I'd be more than willing to work with you to clarify that. To the point about online, to the 50 employee threshold, I view that as a common standard in labor law for small business exemptions, but definitely, again, our intention here is not to put the small meat processing businesses out of business. Not my intention at all. That's why I put forward that 50-employee threshold. I actually, in the last committee, I received praise from the Republican lead because of my willingness to put in that threshold. So again, we're not trying to put the small mom and pops out of business. That's why I put this amendment forward, and that's why I'm willing to work with you or anyone on this committee to clarify that language under the definition. And then as far as the employees, what you brought up with the ventilation systems, again, that's what we've seen happen in other states, and so we're just trying to be consistent with improvements of other states. But again, if there's as this bill goes forward, if there are ways that we can achieve the goal of making sure that if there is a pandemic in which an airborne disease has caused us to be in a peacetime emergency, we want to make sure that our workers are breathing clean air, right? I want the people who are touching my food to be safe, and I want that to be done in a place that's well ventilated, especially if we're in a time of airborne communicable disease. So yeah, would be more than happy to accomplish that goal in a way that is more practicable for these businesses.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair, and I appreciate that, Representative Wolgamott. And I guess I would just sum up by saying, and again, this was a letter that was sent to us from a meat small operation. He says the complexities and differences in scale and approach in the meatpacking industry make it hard for a state legislature to be adequately equipped to deal with a problem such as this. I don't mean to say a problem, but a situation like this, where the situations are so different at a plant that employs 50 or 60 people than one that would employ thousands of workers. And I appreciate your intention here, but I think we're hearing, at least from these smaller operations, that this may be unworkable the way it is right now, and would appreciate working with you as this bill moves forward to try to make some positive changes. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Ream.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Wolgamott, for bringing this bill forward. It's very timely. I actually received a text last night from a constituent who had read the New York Times article that was published on February 25th, titled "Alone and Exploited Migrant Children Work Brutal Jobs Across the U.S." And if you look through that article, you'll see that Worthington is in that article as being, you know, a place where they've received a number of complaints about children working in these meatpacking plants. And it seems like they get fined, you know, the large corporations get fined, but the kids move on to another meatpacking plant. You know, so they're not completely addressing the problem, because we still have, you know, children out there who are, you know, as young as 12, 13, 14 years old who are working at these plants, and they feel forced. You know, one of the quotes from one of those meat processing job workers was, "I still have to pay back my debt, so I still have to work." You know, the children who are working there, they move from plant to plant. So I would love to see, if not in this bill, maybe we could work together on another bill to address this problem, because I think it is, you know, a huge issue. And I know consumers are willing to pay a little bit more money to get meat that is ethically sourced, you know, that isn't, you know, tainted with, you know, child labor. So I think from a business perspective, I think it makes sense to make sure that, you know, we have these laws. And then lastly, I just want to make another point about how I know in the pandemic protections section right there, you know, when you're looking at an airborne illness, a pandemic, I think it's not enough to have a 6-foot radius. So I'm wondering if you'd be willing to work on that. Maybe, I don't know if the U of N, the Center for Infectious CIDRAP, Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy, possibly working with them to come up with language that would be, you know, good both for the employer as well as the employee. So,
Representative Wolgamott.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for those comments. I agree it would be good to work on maybe separate legislation specifically dealing with the problem of children working in these facilities. I would certainly be open to working with you and anyone else. You know, again, the goal here is to strike a balance of making sure that these workers are safe, that these, you know, that there is a radius between workers so that they're not transmitting airborne diseases. But also, I would want to strike the balance of making sure that that it is workable for the employers and that they can actually, you know, we can find that sweet spot, right, where people are having a safe amount of distancing, but that it's that it's workable for the employers and the size of their facilities.
Representative Reed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Wolgamott. Yes, I can see there needs to be a balance between what the employer and employee would need from legislation from like this. Thank you very much.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for this discussion today on the bill, Representative Wolgamott. You know, we're talking about a few different meat processing bills today, and I think, you know, that's important, and I'm, you know, thankful we're doing that in the committee here. But I think one of the concerns I have is, you know, really that 50 employee threshold. It really doesn't delineate out whether you're a meat cutter or someone working in the office. And I think that really needs to be addressed. You know, I think it has some unintended consequences. I think your intentions are probably in the right spot of trying to keep people safe, because I think that is should be all of our goals, is keeping people safe, and you know, regardless of you know, what size of business they are, that should be our goal. However, I think you know, 50 employees is probably really too small of a number on this. It will put unintended consequences on our small businesses. And I know JBS has been in the news a little bit lately. I had had the opportunity to tour JBS down in Worthington about 4 or 5 years ago. And the individual that actually gave the tour was a kinesiologist. She started in sports medicine and was living in Michigan and had an opportunity to move home, or wanted to move back closer to her parents. And one of the jobs that came up was, you know, was this at JBS, and she thought, what in the world do they need a sports medicine person? Really couldn't figure out why that was. And, you know, then when she came there and really started seeing the opportunity there was to be training in the facility of, you know, how to prevent injury, how to not, you know, a lot of it relied on prevention. And I think there's, you know, whether they're all doing this or not, I don't know. But, you know, many of these things in this bill are being carried out by some of the large processors who already have that on staff. So in some ways, it's probably not a bad thing to say that all of them would be able to have these standards. But I think the concern is, you know, has been raised by some others that, you know, to be able to get a doctor, you know, a few years ago, if you wanted a doctor's appointment, you called up and made an appointment. A week or two later, you were there. Now, unless it's an emergency, you might be several months out or longer. And you know, if some of these things, you know, we're putting some of these small businesses in a real precarious spot. And I think even related to the pandemic provisions here, you know, this last one that we've been through was an airborne. Well, we don't know what may be coming next. And I think, you know, this is very prescriptive for an airborne pandemic, whereas it could probably be written more in a an allowance to be able to, you know, following the whatever may be the Representative Reimer, I don't remember who it was there that you had, but you know, there's experts that we can follow on this, and you know, whatever, you know, the next health outbreak may be, it may not be a thing that we need to be 6 feet apart. It may be something completely different. But if we're going to, you know, this is really designed for airborne one.
Representative Nelson, do you have a question?
And And I would just, you know, would appreciate if we could work on this and increase our, you know, the exemption of employees. I think that's something important. And so my question is, are you willing to increase the exemption of employees?
Representative Wolgamott.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Nelson, for sharing those thoughts on this legislation. As I have been this whole time, I'm certainly open to conversations about how to make sure that we strike the balance of protecting workers in these meat and poultry processing plants while not putting small businesses out of business. I have already changed the bill to have 50 employees. I'm certainly open to having different conversations. Again, in the last committee that we had, I received praise from the Republican lead, and we had an 11-2 bipartisan vote because we put this threshold in. So, you know, I'm more than happy to continue conversations about striking that balance. You know, and again, with the amendment that I brought forward today, taking out egg production, you know, I know, as Evan mentioned, there are some other concerns, and I'm certainly, you know, every time I've had this bill up, I've had an amendment that has resulted from conversations and trying to have those goals. So absolutely, I'm open to those conversations. I have been through the entirety that House File 23 has been in existence, and I will continue until we get this signed into law and achieve the goal of providing safe workplaces for workers without putting the small businesses out of business. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Members, just because I allow for a follow-up doesn't mean you should take advantage of that and go extra long to make your point. And with that, Representative Nelson. All right, Representative Burkle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'll try to keep things concise, but a lot has been said that I would say anyway. But I want to circle back to what Representative Reen talked about as far as the six-foot spacing and just remind everyone and bring us back to the COVID pandemic and the situation we saw. It was brought up in committee the other day as well about the hogs we saw destroyed trying to keep up in the processing industry. And maybe Representative Wolgamott could maybe address the – I mean, I understand from the COVID pandemic perspective how we – how and why we did what we did there. But I want to know if you understand from the perspective of line speed and the spacing of employees and what happens there, that I just, the question would be, have you been in, how many plants have you been in, and what size, have you been in a variety of different settings to understand what happens to, from the processor's perspective down to the grower's perspective, whether it's hogs or turkeys or chickens or whatever that might be. What happens on the farm when those systems break up or break down due to line speed issues and the pandemic isolated that in particular in the hog industry where we saw animals destroyed and food wasted, honestly. And the fact that there wasn't enough medium and small size processors to pick up that slack. Now what you're doing with this bill is creating more regulatory structure that makes it harder for those medium and small size processors to exist to pick up that slack. And I'm wondering if you understand the problem you're creating there.
Representative Wolgamott.
Thanks, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative. I have been to a number of these facilities. We went with that six-foot radius because, again, the intention of this legislation is to keep workers safe, right, to keep workers from not spreading airborne diseases. And so we went with a six-foot radius because that's what was the consensus of public health experts during the COVID-19 pandemic is the proper distance for social distancing that would prevent the spread of air droplets. But as I already said to Representative Reem's question, I'm more than willing to, you know, to take a look at changing that in consultation with the businesses and with public health experts. But again, my priority here is that we are keeping these workers safe by following what public health experts say is the proper distance to be distant to prevent the spread of an airborne disease from one person's droplets to another.
Representative Burkle.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate that. Now, and I'll go back to the testifier that made the statement that worker safety is food safety, and I completely agree with that, and it's in the best interest of everybody to have everyone show up to work healthy and safe. And if they don't, of course, what happens is what you saw. Animals destroyed, discarded carcasses, wasted food. And I'm just worried that the bill you have here, and I'm glad you're open to some conversation about what it looks like going forward, but I'm afraid that what you're doing is going to exacerbate a problem we have now.
Representative Jacob.
Thank you, Chair Vang. We had a testifier, I think Greg Andrus, speak specifically to some of the licensing requirements and some of the liability issues. And you know, I think, you know, specifically the boards that needed to be created and the rate that they had to meet at, and getting a medical professional to sign off on the safety. Could you, would you speak to his concerns and the solutions that are in this bill that would address those concerns?
Representative Wolgamott.
Thank you, Representative Vang, or excuse me, thank you, Chair Vang, and thank you for the question, Representative. Really what this is about is developing a safe worker program for purposes of prevention. So it's not like it's not like it's a test where they're safe or not safe. It's really to go in and take a look at the practices that are happening and to develop strategies to prevent chronic injuries and other things. So really it's about soliciting feedback and creating a safe work program. It's not necessarily about signing off or saying that there's, you know, you're safe or not safe, but it's about creating written procedures to identify hazards and contributing risk factors and how to make sure that those situations are prevented.
Representative Jacob.
So the testifier spoke to the financial concerns in that. And then he also spoke to the financial concerns of what it might cost to implement some of the airflow issues, $200,000 to $250,000 on a small business. So what's your answer to if the amount of financial burden will put these places out of business? What's your answer to them?
Representative Wolgamott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the question, Representative. Our intention of this bill is to make sure that workers are safe. So it's not to put people out of business, but it's to make sure that the horrible things I can't imagine someone could tell me that what happened during the COVID-19 pandemic to our workers and what is happening in meat and poultry processing workers in our state is okay. It's not. Workers face terrible conditions. They put their health on the line. They put their family's health on the line. I got many calls from constituents who would say, look, I don't know what to do. People are getting sick in my workplace left and right. People are going into the hospital. I don't want to go to work, but I can't decide. I don't want to have to choose between not going to work, but then I can't get my paycheck and provide for my family. So, you know, I'm thinking about those families who had to make those tough financial choices. The status quo of our current laws did them a tremendous disservice. They think about the impact on their budgets. So again, the point of this bill is to strike that balance where we're not putting the small businesses out of business, but also I'm sorry, but what happened during the pandemic and what we're seeing today is not okay. We should not accept that workers in our state have to go and work in those conditions. So I'm sympathetic, and as I've said many times today, I've already made changes to the bill to address concerns of small businesses. I will continue to be open to that, but I will also not sit by while workers in our state have to have that financial impact on their physical health or their financial well-being. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Cha.
My question is to the testifier, fourth generation. McDonald, can you come up to the testifier table, please? I ask the question while you're approaching here is that as a stakeholder in this industry, if 50 is too low of a number, what is that magic number for you as a stakeholder?
If you can please identify yourself before the committee and proceed.
Yep, I'm Travis McDonald, McDonald's Meats. I would go with the federal and state at that 499 and less. I don't know if there is a magic number. I just know at 50, it affects your mom and pop. It affects your small meat markets. And I feel like it really undermines everything that the state has been trying to do with getting small industry, small meat markets. I mean, we have this shortage. We need us. But, you know, at 50, that is your
Thank
small
you, Travis.
Mom and pop.
Thank you for answering the question. Representative Cha.
And how many employees do you currently employ right now?
42.
Thank you. That's all.
All right. Seeing no further discussion, closing remarks, Representative Wolgamott.
Well, thank you again, Madam Chair and committee members. I really appreciate your listening to my presentation for House File 23. I hope that you will have the backs of these frontline workers who, as I said, put their financial health on the line, put their physical well-being on the line to make sure that our state was fed during the pandemic and continues to put food on our tables every day. Thank you so much for your time, Madam Chair, and I would ask you and your members to support your motion to re-refer House File 23 to the Judiciary Committee.
I renew my motion that House File
23. Madam Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Madam Chair, again, we are seeing a full agenda today and a lot of questions and a lot more discussion should take place. This is an extremely important bill for the state of Minnesota. I would request to lay the bill on the table and ask for a roll call.
Roll call being requested, and that is not debatable. Matthew Saucer will take the roll.
Chair Vang.
No.
Vang, no. Sorry. Hang on one second. Representative Purcell.
No.
Representative Anderson.
Anderson, aye.
Anderson, aye. Representative Cha.
No.
Cha, no. Representative Frederick.
No.
Frederick, no. Representative Hansen.
No.
Hansen, no. Representative Ream.
No.
Ream, no. Representative Sensormura.
No.
Sensormura, no. Representative Tabke.
No.
Tabke, no. Representative Burkle.
Burkle, aye.
Burkle, aye. Representative Harder.
Aye.
Harder, aye. Representative Jacob.
Jacob, aye.
Jacob, aye. Representative Nelson.
Aye.
Nelson, aye.
There being 5 ayes and 8 noes, the motion does not prevail. And with that, I renew my motion that House File 23 as amended be referred to the Judiciary Committee. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say no.
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 The ayes have it, and the motion prevails. House File 23, as amended, is we refer to Judiciary and Committee and General Register. The next bill that we have is Representative Federer, House File 1473 on AURI. And I move that House File 1473 be laid over for possible inclusion to your bill, Representative Federer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 1473 addresses the need for a cost of living adjustment to the base funding for AURI, or Agricultural Utilization Research Institute. As the committee is aware, we've had a presentation from them earlier in the year. It was created by the state legislature nearly 35 years ago and has continued to support entrepreneurs and small businesses across the state, helping to commercialize their innovative ideas on products and processes. It's a simple cost of living adjustment bill. And at this point, I would turn it over to testifiers, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you, Director Shannon. If you can please identify yourself before the committee and proceed.
Very good. Hi. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Shannon Schlecht. I'm the Executive Director of the Agriculture Utilization Research Institute. So our ask here, and I'll be very brief. I'll skip over the background since we've already discussed that. Is really looking at a cost of living adjustment. ARI is not does not automatically receive cost of living adjustments. Our last cost of living adjustment was in fiscal year 20. Nearly 4 years ago for $100,000. We know what's happened with inflation. To keep our programs operating, maintaining, and providing the service that we do to the agricultural community, the industry, the entrepreneurs and producers of advancing value-added opportunities, we're asking for an extra $100,000 over what was approved last year, which would be a 7.5% increase over our current base, which is about half of what inflation calculators indicate for keeping us whole. And that's really, again, just to make sure that we can continue to provide the programs that we're operating today, maintaining competitive salaries for staffing, our rental increase, operational increases, and to continue to provide that impact to the state of over $290 million in new sales every year, the capital investment that we see that we help create across rural Minnesota, and the jobs that we help create and retain. Madam Chair, I'll stop there for any questions.
All right. Discussion to the bill. Hearing no discussion, closing remarks, Representative Federer.
I appreciate the committee's support.
All right. I renew the motion that House File 1473 be laid over for possible inclusion. The next bill we have is House File 1475, another AUI bill. If you can please move your bill, Representative Federick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that House File 1475 be moved or laid over for possible inclusion in on this bill.
All right, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 1475 is, as we already said, established 35 years ago. And what this bill is looking to do is set aside $2.75 million so AURI can upgrade their equipment at their different facilities. And it's spelled out in the bill how that money would be used in the different areas.
All right. And then Director Shannon.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Again, Shannon Schlecht, Executive Director of the Agriculturalization Research Institute. I also do have Dr. Luca Zullo here with me, who is our Senior Science Director, and Jennifer Wagner-Lahr, who is online as well, to respond to any questions on any of the testimony here. So first of all, I'll start on the capital equipment request that we have. And this is really about modernizing, adding, and really helping us upgrade some of the equipment that we have at ARI. We have depreciated over $3.5 million of equipment. This would provide a new slate or a new step for us in terms of the equipment that we need to continue to service the agricultural business in terms of their value-added needs. That would be at our Waseca location and our Marshall location. We're seeing requests for different tests that we can't do currently. We're having equipment that we've been operating since the mid-1990s that we're having a hard time finding repairs for and different replacement parts for. So this would really just create that step change for us in terms of modernizing what we do on our scientific staff and providing those services to our entrepreneurs, producers, and agribusinesses on their value-added needs. The next item that we have is more of an opportunity area. And this is around providing food business support. Food is a key area of work that we have at ARI. We've greatly expanded our food team at the organization over the last several years. We have currently three food scientists on staff and two meat scientists on staff. But we are still seeing an increasing demand of services in this area. Since since COVID, we've seen the cottage food registration number more than double. There are now over 7,000, close to 8,000 registrants in the cottage food side. It's just a large number of businesses to continue to support in the way that we've been doing it as an organization. So this really looks at how can we become more efficient as an organization through creating new tools, new platforms, using digital, and being innovative in our approaches in terms of how are we servicing our cottage food producers, our small food businesses, with the needs that they have to grow their business. As we think about the funnel, right, the funnel keeps growing larger and larger, and we are looking at, you know, gamification, digital tools to really provide those services, and then to continue to provide that one-on-one technical assistance as they grow their businesses and work through the new program or new way of approaching this as we go forward. The next area that we have is an opportunity area around renewable natural gas. And this is, again, just an area that we're seeing a large amount of interest in. We hosted a renewable energy roundtable on this topic back in December. There was a lot more going on here than I think many of us realized in terms of developers looking at Minnesota for opportunities, all right, producers that are being approached for renewable natural gas opportunities. And what we'd like to do with these funds is to do a biomass feedstock analysis across the state of Minnesota. The American Biogas Council indicates that Minnesota could be the eighth largest net renewable natural gas producer in the country, right, if we help facilitate that and move that opportunity forward. This would result in several high-paying jobs or permanent jobs across rural Minnesota, a large number of capital investment that would occur as well, and it would, again, help us meet our renewable energy goals, as well as work very synergistically with the Natural Gas Innovation Act that was passed in June of 2021. So just a lot of things that are synergistic here as we look at this opportunity area, providing new income streams for producers, right, for food waste that could go into this use as well. And then as we think about the digestate and fertilizer opportunities that would exist from anaerobic digestion. So just a lot of positive impacts if we can help move this industry forward in the state. Madam Chair, I'll stop there for any questions.
All right. Discussion to the bill. All right. Hearing none. Closing remarks, Representative Federick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For those who were on the committee last year, I was not on the Ag Committee last year, but the whole legislature was invited to be part of the tour, and I had the privilege of being able to go over to Waseca and tour the AURI facility. And one of the things that stood out to me there by talking with everyone that was involved was just the level of nerdiness of the staff, something that I could relate to. And I really appreciated just how much they would dive into the different areas and how much they wanted to help local entrepreneurs and producers to try to figure out what can they do differently, what can we do here locally in Minnesota to support the state as a whole. So I was pretty excited when I had the opportunity to in turn help AURI in the work that they do. So with that, Madam Chair, I would just renew my motion to lay over House File 1475 for inclusion under this bill.
Representative Federick renews their motion. The House File 1475 be laid over. House File 1475 is laid over for possible inclusion. Our final bill is House File 1303. Representative Nelson. Good to see you again, Representative Nelson. If you can please move your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I would move House File 1303 that it be laid over for possible inclusion.
All right, to your bill, Representative Nelson.
This here, the bill is providing $100,000 for grants available for technical assistance and training for the HACCP plans and the SSOP plan. And then also just business plans as well. We've been talking a lot about safety around meat processing today. And it's something that's important. And as businesses, whether they're starting out or needing to update their plans, just having the funds to be able to go through this. With that, I would like to call up some testifiers.
All right. The first one is Greg. If you can please identify yourself before the committee again.
Madam Chair and committee, my name is Greg Wierschke. I'm with Clean Chickens Company and the Land Stewardship Project. How this project would benefit our company. One, we would have more workers trained in food safety and HACCP plans. So when we have those discussions as leadership and management teams, we would have more input from our employees on how we can make our process more safe. Two, we're currently working on building a lamb and goat halal facility in Wilmer, Minnesota. In that process, there's a lot of training and a lot of expenses that have gone into that plant. This bill would help us and other communities and businesses grow their business and try to meet the needs of food consumption in the state of Minnesota. With this facility we're building, it's gonna be the only halal certified facility between here and Chicago. We have 100,000 citizens in our communities that don't have access to the food they want, and this is just the start. This isn't the value-added products. In order to get there, we need food safety plans, we need business plans, and we need formulation plans. And to get to that point, we need technical assistance. Thank you.
Next testifier is Paul over Zoom. Paul, are you still there?
Yes, I'm still here, and I just want to testify in support of the bill for the same reasons that were said. Appreciate the opportunity. I think it's an important step forward. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Paul. I believe those are all the testifiers in my notes. Are there any public testifiers that would like to testify to the bill? Okay. Discussion to the bill. Representative Cha.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Nelson, would you consider the meat processor with 50 full-time employees to be up to 99 employees?
Representative Nelson.
Let's see. Thank you for the question on that, Madam Chair and Representative Cha. I think going back to the last bill, I think that there's, I really want to focus really on probably the small and probably more of the,
I don't know if you would call them micro, but really a very small businesses with this one. Because under the USDA definition, you know, the small and mid-size, I think mid-size goes up to 499. And so I think what this is really geared for here is really your small ones. That is most likely family-owned, very small processors is what really we're looking at here. I think one of the, you know, it's, and that's my thoughts.
Representative Chau.
Well, thanks for the clarification that 50 employees is considered small. Thank you.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Nelson, for carrying this bill. I'm happy to be a co-sponsor of both of your bills, and thank you for being our bookends today at our meeting, first and last. This is a need that we really see in our community. It impacts folks who have small number of animals on their operation, and we need more of these facilities, so to be able to potentially have some money for these small processors, it's a great need that we have, and I'm very supportive of the bill. So thanks for carrying it.
Representative Ream.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Nelson. I think it's great that you have a bill here that will help the smaller businesses. I'm curious, though, it's a very small amount, and I love the idea of, you know, putting money into education for training, but I'm curious how you came to the dollar amount of $100,000.
Representative Nelson.
I mean, I think part of it is, thank you for the, Madam Chair and Representative Ream, part of it is just a starting point. You know, I don't think that our goal is to fund completely the plan, but at the same time, there's steps in the processes and oftentimes hiring an outside consultant. And so that, you know, if somebody, you know, a small plant, and I'm sorry, I don't have the number of small plants in the state. Maybe there's somebody that does, but you know, there's not a large number of them, but to be able to have some funds available for them, it's really just a starting point.
Representative Reed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Nelson. That's good to hear. Yeah, I would love to know, you know, if that's going to be enough, and you know, what the plans would be for future projects. But I will take that conversation offline. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.
Further discussion. Closing remarks, Representative Nelson.
Thank you for hearing this bill today, and I. For the opportunity to present it, and I appreciate the consideration of. In the future omnibus bill. So thank you. With that, I would renew my motion to lay this over for possible inclusion.
Representative Nelson renews their motion that House File 1303 be laid over for possible inclusion. House File 1303 is laid over for possible inclusion. Members, next week we will go back to our regular committee schedules on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And so with that, our next meeting is Tuesday, March 7, 2023. Thank you so much for the discussion today, and this meeting is adjourned.